Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, raw feeders. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. I'm telling you, they don't let friends feed kibble, but they're still doing it, Dr. Jasek. I mean, I can't stop them. You know, I'm not a dictatorship. I know that that's the thing to be today is a dictator, right?
Right.
It's just like, I'm going to tell you what to do. But the problem is that there could be no dictatorship if you didn't have a bunch of people following you.
Dictator-ese or something.
I was going to say dicks, but still, that's terrible. You wouldn't say that on a podcast. Okay.
You wouldn't say that.
No, I mean, come on. You need to think for yourself. And so we just give out the message. We just give out our experience. And you can take it and disseminate it, dismantle it, distrust it, or use it, right?
Right. But we have the right, we all should have the right to our points of view and our opinion. And, you know, if people don't like it, well, okay, you don't have to agree. But, you know, I think our culture has gotten so much who's right and who's wrong, that there has to be a right and there has to be a wrong, but there doesn't. There can be different ways of doing things. Just like when I treat pets, you know, that's what I tell people. I say, I'm going to give you recommendations based on my experience. I have no idea if it's going to work for your pet. So we're going to have to go forward and see what happens, because every pet is an individual and there are no rights and wrongs. And I think we've gotten in this mindset, well, if, you know, I believe that, you know, what I think is right and you don't think that way, so you're wrong and you're bad and you're evil and you're, you know, I mean, it's just gone so far in our culture, like you're subhuman, you know, you should die because you don't agree with me. It's just ridiculous. What happened to, you know, healthy debate and just, you know, agree to disagree or open your mind? You know, sometimes I listen to things that I don't necessarily agree with, like, I don't know about that, you know, and like, pet health. You're like, I'm not sure I quite agree with that, but I listen because it stretches your mind. It helps you to think. And that's why I think, you know, a lot of times people, and unfortunately, veterinarians, conventional veterinarians, get so locked down into one way of thinking that you can't budge them, such as with raw food, you know, the whole paradigm, raw food's bad. Raw food makes pets sick. They're going to get salmonella from it. All completely without basis, but that's their way of thinking and they're not going to sway from it. So I think, you know, I think to be healthy and to keep your pets healthy, you have to really be open to different ways of looking at things, but you don't just believe everything you hear and you check your sources. And bottom line is you look at your pet and how are things affecting your pet as an individual, not your neighbor's pet, because it worked for your neighbor's pet, might not work for your pet.
Exactly. So speaking of different narratives, let me ask you, what do you think about this? Do you think that farting and bloating is a saintly virtue that signals optimal health?
I've never heard it referred to quite that way.
Well, I'm reading it and I'll tell you why.
But next time I fart, I'm going to remember to say that. That was a saintly virtue.
Well, here's why I say that, because, you know, there's such a debate about fruits and vegetables. Okay. Such a debate about that, especially in the raw dog food diet. Does your dog really need fruits and vegetables? You know, should they eat this one? Should they eat that? Okay. So I get the emails of newsletters from Dr. Paul Saladino, who is the carnivore MD. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's been on the podcast. He's in favor of the raw diet for animals for certain. And he really looks at the role of plant-based foods for people. So today I got this, and he says, "What's up, truth seeker?" I love Dr. Paul Saladino, just the way that he reaches out to people. But he says, GI issues, gut issues, gas, and bloating are so common today, with an estimated 40% of people experiencing one of these problems. And he said, and I don't think it's a coincidence that more people than ever are also trying to get more vegetables into their diet. And he said that most in the nutrition space today will tell you that you need more vegetables from fiber to fix your GI issues. And then that's where his statement comes from. He said, and some plant-based pundits even go so far as to promote farting and bloating as a saintly virtue that signals optimal health. And he said, but guess what? I'm calling BS on that.
Yeah.
And he says, if you're currently experiencing GI issues, gut issues, bloating, or gas, my question is, what are you eating? Which is a great question, because that's the question that we always ask.
Right.
But he said that that in regards to plants, vegetables, leaves, stems, roots, seeds, nuts, grains, and beans are the most defended parts of the plants, and they do not want to be eaten. And they contain many defense chemicals that are designed to mess with your digestion. So what does Dr. Paul Saladino recommend? He recommends eating organs, meat, some fruits, honey, and raw dairy. And he says, welcome to animal-based land. Here, your poops are easy to pass, don't smell horrible, and your gas and bloating are a memory. So I thought that that was funny. Interesting. Do you think that would hold true for pets as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I can't tell you how many times, you know, I see pets that we pull off of. Well, of course, if they're eating kibble and there are all these processed carbohydrates that are super inflammatory and hard to digest, that'll, you know, when we get them on a fresh food diet, that eliminates a lot of GI stuff. But yeah, again, this is one of the reasons I dig so hard into what exactly is the pet getting. And I'll ask multiple times, is there anything else? What other treats? Because if we're having digestive issues and something shows up, like they're giving a grain or treats. I was talking to a client yesterday, and it was, I'm trying to think, it was some kind of joint supplement or something. No, it was for the skin. It was a treat that was supposed to help the skin. And I said, well, would you read me the ingredients? Because she had the bag there, we were on a Zoom call. And you know, like the third ingredient was wheat. And I said, okay, stop those, because that's inflammatory, you know, they'll hit on the key points, like has omega-3s to help with skin health. Like, okay, yeah, omega-3s can help with skin health, but in a processed treat, it's probably a denatured toxic oil by the time your pet eats it. And then with all these extra ingredients like wheat, which contains gluten, can contain glyphosate, all these things that could be very toxic and hard for your pet to digest. I do not think that dogs are meant to digest plant cell walls. They don't digest plant cell walls very efficiently. That's why if you give your dog a little bit of carrot, like a raw carrot, he'll poop out pieces of raw carrot. He doesn't break it down. Not that it's awful to give your dog raw carrots, because it's better than giving him like a milk bone or something for a snack. But they're not getting a lot of nutrition out of it. Now, I do think that some produce, you know, can help feed a healthy microbiome, like the bacteria in the gut will feed on some of that vegetable fiber. And so I've been gauging I don't ever recommend like a huge percentage of the diet be produce. I usually say, you know, 10, maybe 15% tops. But I gauge whether or not we do that based on the dog's response. Because I'll have people come in and say, my dog will not touch a vegetable. I'll say, don't feed him vegetables then, to stick with the animal base. Other people come in and like, oh, my dog just loves broccoli or loves kale. I'm like, well, let's feed him some of that. Or they're out eating grass this time of year. I'm like, well, maybe their body's craving some of that vegetable fiber to feed the microbiome. Because I do think that the bacteria in the microbiome can, to some degree, create cravings for what they want and what they need. But yeah, if you've got a dog that's gassy and bloaty, definitely be looking at what you're feeding.
Yeah, for sure. For certain. And, you know, the, I was looking at an article about fat dogs, right? Fat dogs. And it says, is the green bean diet good for dog weight loss? The green bean diet, what the?
I've never seen that work. And I remember that. And I still hear people say that sometimes, not so much, but probably 15 years ago. So everybody was being told, if your dog was too heavy, then you mix some green beans in with their food because it's more fiber and they'll feel more full. So then they won't eat as much. Never seen it work, because it's just, you're still giving them a bunch more carbohydrates and it's the processed carbs that's putting the weight on them. I mean, dogs, I mean, I hear this. I mean, I know it to be true. I've seen it enough, but I hear this all the time from people that, you know, they start their dog on a raw diet and get them off of those processed carbs and they drop weight and they maintain a really good lean body mass, usually pretty easily. I've only seen, gosh, maybe one or two dogs that we still struggle with keeping their weight down, even though they're on a fresh food diet. But for the most part, they maintain that lean body mass. And so if you take a dog that's overweight, and the other kicker was that usually these dogs would be on like a WD, which is a prescription diet that's got all kinds of fillers like peanut shells and stuff like that in it, which are also probably toxic, just to fill the dog up. Well, you're filling up their belly, but you're not giving them any nutrition, and all those carbs are just stimulating the body to store fat. So it, you know, it's no mystery that that doesn't work.
Yeah. So Richard Patton, who's a PhD, Dr. Richard Patton, he says in the wild, wolves, dogs ate carbohydrates at about 4%, 4%. And that came from wild berries or the stomach contents of their prey. Mm-hmm. But today, the processed foods that are out there are at least minimum 40% carbohydrates. And we see it go all the way up to 60%. So, yeah. I mean, you think about it for yourself. I mean, if I'm trying to lose weight and I'm putting that many carbs in my body, I can eat a whole lot less and still be fatty catty, right? So, so that's not good. That's not good. Hey, I want to ask you, or I've seen on your website, Dr. Jasek, you have gone full bore private membership association. I just want to tell everybody, if you see this note on Dr. Jasek's site, don't let that discourage you or run you away. It's super easy. I just signed my documentation electronically today, Dr. Jasek. It was like, boom, that fast. So I'm sure it's going to be super easy for people who are already clients of yours. Mm-hmm. I know that as of May 15th, you're not going to be serving any more non-members. But if people have not utilized your services as of yet, when they go to your site, what do they need to do?
Well, they go and just fill out the intake, just to go to the regular like new appointment site. And when you go to like schedule, fill out your intake form. And when you go to schedule an appointment, you'll be directed to, there'll be a link you'll be directed to that will ask you to, you know, read and sign the membership. And it really is just super easy. I mean, you can read it if you want. A lot of people are just coming in and signing it, you know, now we trust you guys. And, you know, it doesn't cost anything extra. It is about maintaining our sovereignty as a business and allowing us to practice as we choose and in a way that we feel is best for our clients and patients. And it's keeping us safe from government overreach and mandates. And it's really, you know, it's about how we run and structure our business. It doesn't really change anybody that's already been in. It isn't going to change your experience here at all. It's just that at a certain point, we are going to require everybody to be members. So you will have to do that in order to keep seeing us. But it's, yeah, very, very, very simple. We've tried to make it easy. My husband has worked through a lot of the technology, and we've got just tons and tons of people sending in their applications now. So it's exciting. It feels like a really good change and something, you know, it's one of the toughest things right now in the world is like hearing all this stuff that's going on and kind of not knowing what to do or how to keep moving forward. And I just feel like this is a step that's going to provide our practice some more protection against, you know, future rules and mandates and allow us to keep doing what we're doing for longer. So it feels good to be proactive. And I'll tell you, any entrepreneurs out there, you know, in the paperwork that we send out, there's some links to some really great videos explaining what a PMA is, and you might actually want to consider it for your business. It's not the best choice for all businesses, but I think it could help a lot of businesses, especially if you're, you know, worried about upcoming rules. So I think it's the way of the future.
Yeah. You know, I don't have any fantasies that these mandates are over.
I think that
the ones that we had have been beaten down, beaten back for the time being. And rightly so, if we're going to follow the science, well, let's do that. Let's absolutely follow the science, shall we? Instead of following a dictatorship opinionated. You know, we flew on the plane just a week early because I have not put a mask on. And, you know, we got some bad reviews, Dr. JZ. People didn't want to hear us talking about that. But that's fine. But, you know, I'm not going to hide my face and do all that kind of nonsense. But they were over it a week ago and they really didn't say anything about it. Now, today you can fly. Today you can fly. Today you can get on transportation without having to put on a mask. And that's awesome. So the question would be, if those mask mandates came back, would being in a private membership like what you have, you would not have to follow that inside of your facility, inside of your home where you're practicing?
Yeah, that's correct. We can make our own rules because we are no longer operating in the private sector. We're no longer operating in the public sector. We're in the private sector. And in fact, should some official come up, say somebody turns us in for people coming and going without masks, and an official comes to call us on that, and they're not a member, anybody that's not a member is technically trespassing. And we can just tell them, you have to leave. You have no jurisdiction here because this is private. It's like I've heard the analogy that, like, say, you know, you pay one of your kids to mow the lawn. You give them $5. Well, is he paying taxes on that? Are you, you know, filing, you know, employee paperwork to the state on that? No, you hand him $5 bill. So he's got some, you know, spending money to go out with his friends. And it's the same thing, because that's private within your home, within your family. You're both in agreement that is what's going to happen. You know, son mows the lawn, gets $5. So it's really the similar sort of thing, because everybody is agreeing to be a member. We can make our own rules. As long as we're not harming somebody. You know, if we were killing people in here or something, you know, that, you know, still can't do that.
No,
you know, can't kill, can't steal, you know.
Oh, wait a minute. What are you talking about? That happens all the time. And people get away with it, but I digress.
Well, it does, sadly, and that's outright out there in the public, but that's right. Another topic.
Right. Well, that's very, very exciting. So get on over to AHA Vet, become a member today, and work with Dr. Judy Jasek. So what other fun, I mean, you're dealing with most of the time cancer patients, right? I don't know if that's all you deal with, but I would say that, you know, you can go anywhere for the traditional cancer treatments. You can go anywhere for that. You can't go anywhere for the alternative, out of the box, less toxic cancer treatments. Those are few and far between. One of the thing that you and I were talking about, Dr. Jasek, is now you're looking into if your dog has a cancer diagnosis, is it advantageous to do an anti-parasitic treatment? So I wanted to ask you about that. What is that stemming from? Is that something that you're going to incorporate into your practice? And is that even something that the traditional vets think about today with the dog that has a cancer diagnosis?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of press out there that fenbendazole, which is, this is the anti-parasitic in Panacure, which is commonly used in veterinary medicine. But you can buy, actually just bought fenbendazole in bulk. It's much, much cheaper. It's not priced at pharmaceutical prices, but anyway. So there's a lot of press out there in both people and animals that fenbendazole helps when treating cancer, you know, and I always, you know, I always kind of stand back and kind of watch things for a while when I hear claims like that, because, you know, you have to be careful, where's the information coming from? And, you know, what else is being done? You know, most people, whether they're treating naturally or more conventionally or both, are going to be doing multiple things. So then is the fenbendazole helping, or is it that it's the fenbendazole in conjunction with, you know, other things you're doing, diet change or other therapies? And I've always been a little hesitant with something like giving like a long-term anti-parasitic, because it's got to have a negative impact on the microbiome. It kills parasites. I would think it's going to also be killing off some of the bacteria in the gut and could throw the gut microbiome out of balance. So I've been a little hesitant, but then I've also heard more and more being said about parasites, how most humans have parasites and pets probably have parasites that may not be apparent. They could be living in other parts of the body and they don't show up in like a stool test. You know, we can check a fecal test and there's no parasites in there, but there could be parasites elsewhere in the body. And I've heard some people say that that tumors are encysted parasites. Now that's never been proven to my knowledge. However, if we did, I can't get on board with doing fenbendazole like day after day after day after day, because I do think that could negatively impact the microbiome. But if we did a parasitic course, so what's really important, if you're truly treating parasites, you have to time the treatments, because these treatments kill the adults and maybe some of the larvae. But if there's any eggs, a lot of times the treatments won't kill the eggs. You have to wait for those eggs to hatch out, but then you need to kill those adult parasites or the larvae before they have a chance to lay more eggs. So that's why we do it like 3 weeks, like with fenbendazole, you should go 3 days in a row, wait 3 weeks, do another 3 days in a row. And you might even repeat that cycle more times. Like you could maybe do 3 or 4 treatments at 3 week intervals, but at least that way, you know, if there are parasites, we're going to be effectively eliminating them. Because I can't get on board with doing treatments like that just because we heard that it's effective, because I think there could be some adverse effects. But if we're truly going to be treating parasites and we're going on this theory that parasites could be involved in cancer or other forms of inflammation in the body, then we need to be scheduling the treatments and dosing such that we're going to be effectively eliminating parasites and not just putting them on it. Most protocols I've seen, they just kind of put them on it and leave them on it. And the other thing I have heard is that if those drugs are around, there's like some parasites have a protective mechanism that will keep the eggs from hatching. And so if you're giving these drugs day after day after day, and those eggs won't hatch, and then all of a sudden you stop, well, then all those eggs that are there are going to hatch, and then you're going to have your parasites all over again. So that's why the timing is super important. You got to let those eggs hatch out, and then you got to kill those new adults before they have a chance to lay more eggs. And so it might be benefit to do that cycle, you know, at least twice, you know, once 3 weeks later, maybe even, you know, do that 3 or 4 times at 3 week intervals, just to make sure parasites are not an issue. Because I think when we're treating cancer, which is so serious, this is probably a pretty safe treatment to do it scheduled like that. And, you know, I don't think we have definitive proof that parasite, I mean, I think cancer it also has multiple causes. It's not just one thing, but if parasites are even a part of that, or there are some parasites that might be weakening the pet's immune system and damaging their health, then getting rid of them would, I could see where that would definitely help with our treatment success.
No, I was looking at this drug and they were saying, this could be another one of those, oh, that's the dog medicine. Like, you know, yeah. Ivermectin was the horse medicine, because they say this drug is often ignored because we use it on animals. But there was a study that was done back in 2008 with this particular drug on cancer cells. And they said, but humans can handle it. It's a safe drug with little side effects. And it's a repurposing of this drug for cancer treatments. And it's very, very cost effective. So that's the problem, Dr. Jasek. When we find a drug that you can repurpose that is cost effective, yeah, you're going to get a lot of pushback on it. But they were talking about if you combine this with great vitamins. In this article, it was saying E, B, D, K, and A, because they have big antioxidant properties, then these really do inhibit that glucose uptake by the cancer cells and shrink those tumors down as well. So that's very, very interesting.
And I think it's still super important, you know, whether you believe parasites contribute to cancer or not, the whole terrain theory is always super important. There's no magic bullet. There's nothing you can give your pet or give yourself for that matter that's going to fix things if you're eating a crappy diet or feeding your pet a crappy diet, such as a kibble diet. If you're not willing to support the terrain and keep the body healthy, you're not going to really be helping pets by, you know, just adding in some supplements or even something like the fenbendazole. I think it's an adjunctive treatment. It's something that might be worth doing, just, you know, again, if parasites are even a part of the cause, it may help, but you have to do all the other stuff too. There's no just magic bullet, easy out, give the pill, and this is all going to go away. You have to do all the terrain stuff. And, you know, all those vitamins that you're mentioning, you know, our pets are going to get those if they're on a healthy, properly rotated raw diet. You don't have to add in a whole bunch of supplements if you're doing the nutrition thing properly.
Exactly. Exactly. So would that be a good idea to also use ivermectin?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's interesting, you know, if we look at, you know, there's individual drugs that do certain things, but then, you know, when we look at drug classes that, like, you know, groups of drugs that treat similar things. So you have your antiparasitics, like your fenbendazole and your ivermectin, and even antiparasitic herbs. Antiparasitic herbs like wormwood and black walnut can also be effective, but it can take a long time. Like, you might need to stay on them for months to get rid of any parasites. And, you know, in the case of cancer, you might not want to do that. You might want to get rid of the parasites sooner rather than later. And I have heard, you know, it's like ivermectin has been in the spotlight because of COVID. So a lot of people are looking at it and noticing lots of benefits going on it. So is that all related to the fact that it eliminates parasites or to something else? You know, I don't think we know all the answers to that. But if you're looking at this from a truly like antiparasitic standpoint, we definitely know that some parasites will be more susceptible to certain drugs more so than others. I think there can be some parasitic resistance. So the fenbendazole is in Panacure, which is a very common antiparasitic used in dogs. So it makes sense that we might get some parasites that are resistant to that. So another thing you could do would be to rotate. So do like your 3-week cycle. Like, say you started with the fenbendazole, did 3 days, 3 weeks later, do 3 more days. Next time, 3 weeks later, do a dose of ivermectin. 3 weeks later, do a dose of ivermectin. So you're incorporating both of them, which might be more comprehensive. And for what we can see, you know, they don't really do any harm. Now, would I do this in a dog that's perfectly healthy, has no symptoms, no cancer, no itchy skin, no chronic anything going on? Yeah, probably not. You know, if the dog is healthy, their body is managing things. Their body is handling things. So I probably wouldn't be giving their body more things to process. But again, if you're looking at it from a, you know, let's eliminate parasites as a potential cause for something like cancer, I think rotating in a couple of different medications that we know are safe and have been around a long time. I mean, things like fenbendazole and ivermectin, they've been around a long time. And there's parts of the world where ivermectin is just used routinely. People take it routinely because there's a lot of parasites in some countries. People get this river blindness. It's a parasite that goes in their eyes and causes them to go blind. And they just take ivermectin, like once a week or something to prevent that. So it can be given very safely, but I wouldn't give. So, you know, the pharmaceutical companies tend to jump on these bandwagons like, oh, well, you know, treating parasites for cancer is now a thing. Let's come out with some brand new drug that we just patented and make a whole bunch of money selling it. Don't use those products. Use the ones that have been around for a long time where we would know if these drugs were toxic or, you know, could have some life-threatening reaction. You know, we would know it because they've been in use for so long. If a dog is outwardly 100% healthy, no symptoms, you know, they're on a fresh diet, still it's important to do all the other things we talk about, minimize vaccines, feed the raw diet. You're doing all that, the dog's perfectly healthy. I probably wouldn't give them something that their body has to process and detox from. But if we already have a serious condition like cancer, or, you know, I'm wondering about some dogs that just have this, you know, horrible chronic itchy skin that's really hard to clear up. Is there something, because we know that animals can try to detox through their skin. So is there something that they're trying to detox from that's like in their skin and they just can't get it out, and giving an antiparasitic can help? I mean, I think if we have a chronic condition that's potentially life-threatening or really adversely affecting quality of life, such as severe chronic itching, then it's worth a try. But would I do it on a dog that appears otherwise perfectly healthy, doing fine? I probably wouldn't.
Got it. That's the line. Chronically having issues, chronic issues versus a perfectly healthy dog. Perfect. Mm-hmm. I got it. All right, everybody, get over to ahavet.com where you can be a part of the private membership association. This is really a breath of fresh air. You can breathe easy. Your dog is going to be protected. And Dr. Jasek is going to be able to step outside of the box in so many other ways and protect you and your dog. So get over to ahavet.com today. Get your dog on a species appropriate diet, because that's where you got to start. I mean, you got to get it off the processed foods. You got to get it off the kibble. No processed treats. Come on, let's clean up that diet. All right. Go to rawdogfoodandco.com where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.